Hi, welcome to Sacred Conversations with Vision Battlesword. This is an audio series created by me and by the Sacred Light spiritual community for our own benefit as well as for anyone else that might be interested to hear it. This represents a new kind of podcast or a new type of audio series that I call a community conversation. So I'll be talking with the Sacred Light spiritual community and we'll explore all types of topics from truth to philosophy, spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, and many, many more. And the goal of this is just to explore reality, to explore truth, and to see what all of the different pieces and all the different perspectives are of reality that we can put together into an integration of an entirely new philosophy. So I hope you'll join me for this journey, and without further ado, here's our episode. Thanks.
Hey, Glad.
What is up, Vision?
How are you doing today?
I feel happy and alive.
Who are you, Gladius Sovereign?
That is a great question. I'm the one who is, and that's the end of the story. Beyond that, I'm someone who really, really enjoys deep and meaningful connection and conversation. I'm someone who is always seeking to expand the love that is in my heart and to share it freely with others. I'm someone who really loves studying esoteric wisdom and condensing like advanced concepts into something that's extremely simple, and then like synthesizing something new from all of that wisdom and then just sharing it openly and freely with people. That's my jam.
I sense that's why we get along well.
Yeah.
When we get along well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I am Vision Battlesword, founder of Sacred Light, creator of Intentional Autonomous Relating, and host of Sacred Conversations. And a moment ago, we were chatting and you were telling me about some new revelations you've been having about forgiveness and acceptance and their power to change our belief system. Is that fair?
Yes. And beyond that, using acceptance and forgiveness for relationship repair, mm-hmm. using it for internal self-relationship repair. Really, really repairing any structure of disharmonious or undesired energy, experience, etc. It seems like, at least what's coming through for me now, is that acceptance and forgiveness can be applied as a universal solution to almost anything.
Wow. Okay. And a moment ago, again, you were walking me through kind of the process of how this works. Could you just do that for me again?
Totally. Yeah. So the idea is really simple. Let's say, for example, that a thought comes up of anger that is directed towards an experience. Doesn't matter what it is. So what I would recommend is just focusing the attention on the energy of that anger. It can be sadness. It can be fear. It can be whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. You focus your attention on the energy. With your attention placed on the energy, you just say, thank you. I love you. I accept you exactly as you are. Pause. I forgive you completely. And that's it. That's the algorithm. Now, one thing that I didn't mention earlier is that I think that the word I and understanding, there's a very specific definition involved here, is really important. So when we say I don't necessarily mean the small ego self. What I'm referring to when I intend it to myself, I accept you exactly as you are, I forgive you. I'm talking about the infinite eternal I am, or the higher self, the higher mind, however you want to define that higher, more expanded definition of self that has totally transcended and is above all of these little ego, personality, disputes, emotions, thoughts, beliefs, etc. So that is one important, not caveat, but added definition to stack onto the process, is that when you're forgiving, when you're accepting, forgive and accept through that bigger I, that capital S self, that true self.
Okay. I have a few questions. So yeah. First, there's the words that we speak, whether we speak them internally or out loud, and then there's the actual intention, maybe let's say focusing of our attention on internalizing the meaning behind those words.
Yes.
If this is making sense.
Yeah.
And so the question is, for someone who may have difficulty or may feel resistance or just is having trouble finding their way to that actual internal experience of forgiveness, mm-hmm. internal experience of acceptance, how is that done? How is that experience created above and beyond just the superficial speaking of the words?
So there's two answers, and the second is going to get into this principle of counterintention that I was mentioning earlier. But the first is a useful idea. So if we ever have any difficulty in experiencing something, a very useful question is, am I maybe holding on to some kind of paradigm, some kind of belief that is preventing me from experiencing this effortlessly? So for example, if at a subconscious level, I believe something like forgiveness means they'll just do it again. If I accept it, then I'm tolerating it and allowing it. I'm not willing to accept. If I'm holding these agreements with myself at a subconscious level, then my sincere intention to accept things, my sincere intention to forgive things is going to be subtly masked and prevented from fully coming into being because of those fear-based beliefs that were created in a valid past experience, but they're still getting in the way of the present execution of those intentions of acceptance and forgiveness. So this goes into the idea of counterintention. So the moment that I actually intend to fully accept this experience, fully accept this person, fully accept this belief that is within me exactly as it is, I may notice resistance. Okay. So the instant that I become aware that that experience of acceptance and forgiveness is not effortless, whatever that other experience is, whether it's like a subtle sense of pushing away, like, no, I don't want to do that, or like a contraction in the chest, or whether it's like a sense of apathy, neutrality, that's not possible, whatever that noticeable shift in your state of being is that occurs the instant that you intend to accept, place your attention on that. Place your attention on the resistance. Place your attention on the thing that comes to the surface the moment that you intend to execute the intention. You can conceptualize whatever this new emergent energy is as resistance. I like to conceptualize it as counterintention. So the intention that I'm executing is acceptance and forgiveness. The energy that rises the moment that I intend to do so is some flavor of fear or anger or what have you. And so now the task is simply to love and accept that energy that is coming up and resisting the acceptance and forgiveness.
Okay. So what you're saying, it sounds like what you're saying is that if there's something that you'd like to shift or move for yourself in your experience emotionally or in your belief system, you can try to either forgive and or accept it. You can set your intentions on that. You can choose to do that or to try to do that. And then if that feels difficult or challenging, or you don't feel like that acceptance or that forgiveness is really fully coming into your experience and that you're letting that go, then you can shift your attention to whatever seems to be coming up instead of that, or exactly. Or coming up between you and that.
Yeah.
Forgiveness. And then you can execute different processes to shift that out of the way.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, there's something else that I wanted to ask you is the algorithm that you conveyed initially sounds a lot to me like the Ho'oponopono program.
It's very similar. There's a key distinction.
Okay.
In Ho'oponopono, we ask or declare, intend, please forgive me. So that is placing the onus of forgiveness on your imaginal relationship to whatever the thing is. You're asking them to forgive you. Whereas ultimately, as a paradigm shift, as a perspective shift, in some sense, if we subscribe to the idea that this entire reality is just a dream, there is no separation, there is only one, there is no you. So I'm just taking ownership of the process of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not requiring or requesting that anyone else forgive me. I'm saying, I forgive you. You are me. There is no you. There, all is one. So I accept you exactly as you are. You are a perfect facet of all creation. I accept you exactly as you are. And I forgive you completely.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, okay. I can see that those two patterns are slightly different.
Yeah.
Because the pattern that you're talking about is really about coming to a place of forgiveness and acceptance in and for yourself. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ho'oponopono carries with it an aspect of making amends or making apology,
yeah,
with someone else.
Right.
So it's external versus internal in a way.
In a way.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so there's two things that are coming up for me in what you're saying that are kind of, to me, are stimulating. One is that concept of forgiveness can be unilateral. And maybe it's even true that that's the most powerful form of forgiveness, not expecting or needing reciprocity in that.
Yeah.
Does that resonate for you?
I think that it's probably preferable in general if there's a dispute among two people for them to both realize that state of I forgive you for themselves and to forgive the other person for themselves. And then as an emergence of that forgiveness that they've both chosen and created for themselves, then the relationship feels more harmonious. So yeah, I think so. I think that forgiveness as a purely selfish act of like, yeah, I'm doing this because I want to live in a state of forgiveness.
Yeah. And acceptance and maybe thereby peace.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing is about acceptance, which what you're saying to me now is sort of leading me down a path of noticing that a lot of the different things that we do when we're helping people to clear beliefs, release old stories, integrate past experiences, process emotions, and all the different kind of things that we do with our various forms of facilitation are actually all creating acceptance. That's kind of the end result. Whichever path you take, that's where the relief comes from, actually.
I've never conceptualized it directly like that, and I don't think I would have previously had I not started to experience the power of true acceptance as a shortcut to that end state. I think that what I would have previously said, and I'll be curious to hear your take on this, is that the desired end state is something like neutralization of the emotional charge tied to the past experience, tied to the belief, tied to the whatever. And once that, once the emotional charge is fully diffused out of the experience, then it carries no emotional weight. We're essentially free from it at that level. That's how I was thinking about it. And then as a result of there not being any emotional charge, I look at it and I go, okay, that feels neutral. Cool. I can move on with my life. And we could define that the peace that that's creating, the neutrality that that's creating as acceptance. But I feel curious to hear your take.
Well, I don't know that I agree with you. And we've kind of bumped up against this difference in perspective before. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I agree with you that there is a goal, which is to remove emotional charge from one's experience or from connection to memories of past experiences or language structures, which we may call beliefs. I don't necessarily know that I think that is the goal of, let's say, the removal of resistance or obstacles or suffering. Maybe is, I think, a better, like a, maybe suffering is the word that makes the most sense to me. So it seems to me that people can experience, have a very full, rich emotional experience that does not feel like suffering.
This is true.
Even when, you know, we're experiencing emotions. And this is kind of interesting because there's a another conversation that I just had with Jackson, mm-hmm. where we were exploring the emotions and a reframe around the interpretation of emotions, where each and every of the, let's call it, seven basic emotions, like joy, love, anger, fear, shame, guilt, and sadness and pain, can be reinterpreted as an expression of desire, mm-hmm. which is super interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've often thought that all of the emotions are valid and useful, mm-hmm. and helpful parts of our experience, and ways that parts of ourself communicate,
yes.
with each other and with our so-called ego self or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, there can be the case that people do want to remove some specific kind of emotional charge from their life, or that they might want to change their relationship with a specific emotion or the way that they experience it, if the way they experience it is as suffering or an obstacle to their life, an obstacle to creating the experience that they'd like to have for themselves. But it seems to me that what coming back to acceptance, it seems to me that that is possibly, this is a new idea that I'm just exploring with you in this moment. Mm-hmm. Possibly that is actually the switch that's getting flipped, mm-hmm. by a great many different modalities of therapy, counseling, self-help.
I can see that.
Things that tend to lead to the experience of peace. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, as a quick aside, would you please define peace for me? As you understand it?
Yes. So I see peace as a state of being where there is generally somatic relaxation and absence of contraction and tension in the physical body. Perhaps a slight sense of what could be defined as well-being or contentment in the present moment. And in my definition of peace, there's also a sense of non-attachment to any particular outcome or experience. I'm just at peace with what is, regardless of what is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is that different than acceptance?
How is that different than acceptance? What a question. I think that peace is a state of being, whereas acceptance is a verb. It is a doing to accept. Although I suppose one could choose to intend acceptance and then reach a state of being known as acceptance.
I think it's used in both. I mean, I think generally speaking, we use that word both of those ways.
Precisely.
Yeah. Okay. No, I like that distinction, though, of acceptance as an action.
Yeah. I can't peace you, but I can accept you.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
At least in our language definitions.
Right. Yes. You cannot to peace, but you can to accept.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. That makes sense. But it seems to me that there's a lot of overlap.
Huge.
In those two definitions.
Right. And to go off of what you were sharing earlier about, like, there's intrinsic utility. This is my reframing of it, at least. There's a lot of intrinsic utility to our emotional experience. And it's not necessarily a universal solver to just discharge emotion out of the human experience. Mm-hmm. If you do that rampantly, a lot of unforeseen consequences occur. Mm-hmm. I can attest, mm-hmm. from my direct experience. Mm-hmm. Whereas what is now emerging is that quite possibly this state of acceptance seems to have a curative property to it.
Yeah.
And a curative property which seems to accumulate a new way of being in the world, where acceptance becomes the baseline for what is. And it seems to me the more times that I flex this muscle of acceptance, the more accepting I become. It's like I take on acceptance as an attribute of my consciousness, which is really cool.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we're exploring this. I think this is really interesting and powerful. And kind of as I joked around a little bit before we started the recording, I feel like I've heard this somewhere before. Like in every, major religion or enlightenment philosophy, and many, many have reflected something about acceptance or something like this. It reminds me of Buddhism. And I just want to say right now, the four, oh gosh, I can't remember if it's pillars or tenets. There's four different things in Buddhism, so many different collections of four things in Buddhism. But I believe it is the four pillars of Dharma, if
Got
I'm
it.
not mistaken, which is that all composite phenomena are impermanent, all contaminated things and events are unsatisfactory, all things and events are empty and selfless, nirvana is true peace.
I would need definitions for some of those terms to fully understand, but I can grok
Yeah, especially
some of what they mean.
contaminated.
Oh,
Yeah. It's kind of a linchpin word in there, but to me, that's a statement about acceptance of how things are and that they inherently will not continue to be that way. It's a statement about the acceptance of the natural state of change that we and the entire universe exist in, and an ongoing evolutionary process. And so there's a kind of acceptance that I think comes from that, that brings true peace, that can bring a person to true peace, to realize that whatever things are right now, they will not continue to be that way. And also, that's true for myself as well.
And everything, as long as it's within the domain of existence.
And the contamination, I believe, is attachment. Attachment to a wanting of things to be a particular way or a different way than they are. And it also, it brings up for me just the kind of concept of cool, like a cool person, like imagine Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
Got it.
Just that relaxed state of like, yeah, man, it's all good. Whatever. It'd be cooler if you did. It's like cool is a kind of state of acceptance that someone presents, that someone models. Don't you think?
By yes, and by definition, it is not the same thing as acceptance as an intention. So there are meaningful distinctions between the two. However, I think that the concept of cool and just like, all right, that's cool, man, cool, conveys a very similar intent. But I think that it's like acceptance is the real McCoy. Acceptance is like the pure manifestation of that intention. And cool is like a colloquial that also has a lot of other definitions and meaning confused into it.
That's fair. Well, yes, I think that we can use the word cool to mean something I approve of. And that's not the sense in which I'm using it. I'm using the word cool as a description of a person and their state of being, which seems to be that they generally accept what is and are at peace with it. So cool, another way of saying cool is unrattled, calm.
Steady, present. Yeah, these things.
And so that's what I'm kind of saying. I'm just noticing how many different ways that underlying or fundamental state or practice of acceptance, like how many tendrils it has out into our philosophies, our colloquialisms. We generally, it's like in the core DNA or the core programming of what we know to be true about life in the world is that when you can reach a state of acceptance, then you can have some peace.
And I want to reiterate the algorithm and share like a very direct way in which it can be applied to immediately experience peace. So one thing that has just occurred to me that is that we can welcome any emotional state that is alive within us, consciously or subconsciously. So we can literally speak the words out loud, I welcome in love. And just instantly notice, I welcome in love. And there's love immediately on command. And we can also intentionally say something like, I welcome in my deepest fear. And immediately somatically, there's like sadness and fear, like in my left face and chest. So I'm just going to breathe for a sec.
Totally. You're right. It's like when you say those words, our words are so powerful. You know, kind of coming back to what I was saying before about, well, to achieve a state of acceptance or forgiveness, there might be more that's required than just speaking the words. But truly, speaking the words will take you very far down the path. Even just speaking them is like, you know, I welcome in my deepest fear. It's like picking up the phone and dialing the number for, hey, deepest fear, you want to come over?
Please come up.
You are invited.
You're being invited into my awareness.
Yeah, it's true.
So that is just an example to invoke some kind of emotional charge. There are plenty of methods that one can use to discover beliefs, stored emotions, etc. That's one of many. So I welcome in my deepest fear, I welcome in my deepest shame, I welcome in my deepest guilt, whatever the emotion is that you would like to experience acceptance and forgiveness of within yourself. And so when that emotion comes up, so I'll just do it in real time and speak to my direct experience of it. So I welcome in my deepest fear. I notice the energy and contraction in my heart. It's like along the left side of my face and in my heart. At this point, I can choose, if I desire, to seek to understand what this energy is trying to tell me and engage in a dialogue with it and see if it has any wisdom for me. I can. There's all kinds of processes and things that I can do with this fear and with this emotion. And for the purpose of this experience, I'm just going to focus my attention on it. I welcome in my deepest fear. And with my attention placed on this energy, which is primarily in my head, I simply say, thank you. I love you. I accept you exactly as you are. I forgive you completely.
And who are you speaking to right now? Are you speaking to the fear? Are you speaking to yourself?
You could say that I'm speaking to the fear, and I'm using the word you as though I'm speaking to another person, but I know ultimately that I'm just speaking to an aspect of myself. Does that make sense?
Who is I?
Now we get into the definition of I, but in just a moment,
okay.
We'll define I. For now, what I want to share is that in my direct experience, the fear, the instant that I intend, so before the word accept has even finished coming out of my mouth, the moment that I intend to accept it, I notice, it's gone. That's what I notice in my experience. And I think that's really beautiful. And that happens about 85% of the time. And about 15% of the time, the moment that I forgive is the moment that just, bye-bye.
So really cool. You're saying sometimes acceptance is insufficient and it requires going further to forgiveness.
That's how it seems to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you interpret the mechanism of what's happening in these experiences?
That requires me to define I.
Okay.
So I alluded earlier in this conversation that when I'm saying I, what I know that I mean ultimately is that God, the eternal I am, the infinite all being, I'm using I and knowing that I am just an expression, a fractal figment of that consciousness. I, in some sense, am identical to the infinite, eternal, all-being. I am that. So that's the way that I see it. So when I say I don't mean the birth name Nick Runlett with a life story and a personal past. I mean the transcendent, eternal creator of everything that is, that I accept you exactly as you are.
Referring to fear, which is another different, like a fractal within a fractal, a fractal part of that fractal.
Yeah. So within the vast complexity of this individual consciousness that I embody, I have all kinds of stories and emotions and thoughts and feelings, and I can make a choice in any given moment to stop resisting it and to just accept it exactly as it is.
Well, within that frame, though, so how do you interpret the mechanism of what's happening within yourself, meaning that fractal piece of God? But how do you interpret what's happening between you and fear when fear vanishes from your experience in the light, let's say, of acceptance or in the presence of acceptance?
My immediate sense is that I need more metaphysical knowledge to be able to answer this like accurately, but I'll share what I'm sensing. It seems like when I accept it, I'm seeing through an illusion. It seems like I'm actually becoming aware that the emotion isn't even real. And it is like literally vanishing out of existence the moment that I accept it. That's how it kind of seems from my first person view. So the idea would be something like this emotional charge is just like something that isn't real. It's something that my small ego mind identity created and it has its attention fixed to, but in the broader sense of like infinite eternal consciousness in the universe, that little creation, once it becomes accepted by the infinite eternal creation, it's just seen as something that is no longer necessary, doesn't need to exist. I'm not exactly sure about that. What seems to be happening is that it's like I'm piercing through an illusion. That's what seems to be happening.
I see. Well, you described the emotion itself, that thing that the you or I, sorry, that thing that the I is communicating with as a part of yourself. So when you accept that part, does the part disappear? Was the part itself an illusion? Or is there a part there that is generating an emotion, but that emotion itself is an illusion?
This all depends on how you identify as a consciousness. So if you identify as the one who's having thoughts, the one who has parts, and the one who has emotions, then you experience that those thoughts and those parts and those emotions are an emergent property of you. They are part of you. But I think that what's also possible is that you can just identify as the eternal, infinite source of all being, and then see from that perspective that thoughts and emotions and what we call from internal family systems parts are just phenomena that are rising in awareness. And I identify as the awareness that is observing the temporary phenomena rising and falling with time. So I'm in this interesting transition state of identifying less and less and less as a person and identifying more with awareness itself.
Fascinating. When you say person, you kind of, I'm interpreting that to mean like a narrative construct.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a slightly different interpretation. Would you like to hear it?
I would.
It has to do with the way I conceive of parts and feelings, by which we're using that word to mean emotions and not sensory experiences in this moment.
So not maybe, sensations, but emotions.
Yeah, maybe we'll be as clear as possible about that. So the way I think of parts and emotions is I think of, I have a very like kind of biological, physiological, integrated conception of human experience. So I think not just about ourselves as spiritual beings, like what you've been describing previously. I think of us as not just psychological constructs, you know, an emergent phenomenon of an informational process, let's just call that. But there's also like a very nuts and bolts biology, physiology component of it for me. So I think about our brains and our overall thinking systems, and I use that word in plural because it seems to me that there are several independent thinking systems and actually even independent thinking organs in the body. In particular, I can see at least three different minds, and probably more than three, but I can see at a minimum three in the actual brain itself. Left hemisphere, right hemisphere, and then the what I call the survival brain.
Yeah.
The brainstem, amygdala, limbic system, hippocampus, that whole cluster of brain tissue as an independent thinking mind. And then additionally, of course, you know, we've been starting to learn a lot more about the neural networks in the heart and in the gut. So I see, I have a five brain model of human psychology right now. I can see at least five different thinking minds that are coexisting almost like a team in a way, like it's a team thinking process. And the different brains may have very different experiences, ways of communicating, and even, you know, perceptual systems. I think parts a lot of times are literal parts. I think parts a lot of times are different brains that are attempting to express themselves within this strange integration of our overall psychology. And then there, I believe that there is an emergent mind, which is in a way purely informational, that is like a meta brain, a virtual brain that emerges from all of the different interaction among the five brains. That thing, that virtual brain, is I. That is the ego. That is the thing that thinks it is the entire brain or the entire mind or our entire perceptual system. But it's like a virtual machine running on a cluster of servers.
I see. That's fascinating.
Do you? Does it?
Sorry.
Little joke.
This thing sees.
This thing sees. A thing says it sees.
Things.
Anyway, that's the model I'm working with right now.
Okay.
And so when a part comes up, I think it can be I'm using computer terminology that I know you understand, but I'm just going to, it's you and me talking. So that's how I'm going to talk.
Good.
When a part comes up, I think it can be a shadow copy of the virtual machine that split off, or that was saved, a save game state.
Yeah.
You could think of it as such.
Got it. Yeah.
A save game state that occurred at a specific moment in lived experience when the organism was under heavy stress, heavy trauma, peak experience, all different reasons why the system may decide to create a copy, a save state at that point in time that we may want to come back to later. And I also think that a part can be another physical brain, almost like one of the computers in the cluster that is surfacing a message. You know, an error message, a warning message, new insight, informational message, whatever. And these different systems may communicate to us in very different ways. But in particular, it seems to me that we have one physical brain that has kind of ownership of the language program, the left hemisphere of the physical brain structure. All the other brains have to communicate in some other way. And those other ways are often, well, those other ways are all of the different aspects of our experience that doesn't come through in words, in language constructs.
Felt sense, imaginal, like imagery.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And emotional.
Yeah.
Emotional. So that's my model. When I'm encountering a part in myself or in anyone else that I may be playing with, or an emotional charge, as you call it, I look at it through the lens of there's something here that has a message for me, whether that's a message from the past, a past version of me, a past copy of me, or whether that's a message from the present coming from another one of my thinking systems. There's somebody here that wants me to know something, to hear something, or that just wants to be witnessed, that wants their presence to be known. And that experience of releasing the emotional charge that you describe, to me, is when that part feels that its message has been received. In other words, hey, virtual ego, I've got a message for you. The message is fear. Mm-hmm. It may or may not be helpful to get in touch with what specifically is that fear about. Mm-hmm. Sometimes maybe the part or the, let's just call it, they're all parts. So the part doesn't need you to know what it's about. There doesn't need to be a reason. There doesn't need to be meaning. It's just, I got some fear for you. Yeah. And when the ego fully receives that and says, okay, I hear you. Mm-hmm. You got fear. Is there anything else? Sometimes that's it. Nope, that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. And then the experience of that fear sometimes just dissipates on its own.
Oftentimes it dissipates. I mean, I share your experience and have guided people through that experience many times. And sometimes also I think that those emotional charges or messages do actually have meaningful information to convey.
Yeah.
And sometimes if they're not going away, there could be a further conversation that could be fruitful between you, ego, and other part of your brain or past version of you, where there's something that part really wants you to actually integrate, actually internalize in terms of what it feels is important, either to our safety, our thriving, our flourishing, pursuing of joy, whatever it is that part desires.
Ultimately.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that there's a whole life path that can be created from just continuously expanding the self-awareness of navigating internal relationships with these different thinking systems and these different parts. And the more information that we glean from those parts, what I've experienced is that there can be a baseline level of trust that starts to become established in the relationship. And when there's that baseline level of trust in that relationship, the information is even more fluid in its bidirectional flow. So initially, if one comes in and says, hey, part, you're invalid, and this belief that you're holding is stupid, stop it, that part can get actually defensive and want to hold on tighter to the thing. Just like a normal fucking person.
Just like a normal person.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a normal fucking person. Totally. It's just like...
when you're dealing with your parts, ask yourself, how would you want to be treated?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Your parts probably feel the same way.
Exactly. And I think that, this is part of why perhaps this medicine of acceptance and forgiveness is so immediately useful and practical. It's just, there's no intention to change. I think that so much of what I was doing in my initial creation of sovereign mind is, I don't like this experience. I want to get rid of it. I'll own that. I want to get rid of it. And that can produce a result of the cessation of that particular experience, but there isn't always a cost associated. One of the costs associated is the loss of an opportunity to gain self-awareness and self-respect through the conversation with the part that created the belief in the first place.
Yeah.
That's one dimension of it. And now what I'm starting to see is that through going at it at that approach and only that approach for so long, there was also an opportunity cost to experience genuine self-acceptance, which could have produced seemingly the same end result that I was desiring, but through a way more loving lens.
Yeah.
That's less command, control, delete.
Right.
And more welcome, love, accept.
I think it's key to, and I'm open to whether or not you actually agree with what I'm about to say, but
yeah.
I think it's key to this conversation to say, for me to say that a state of acceptance or enacting the action of acceptance does not inherently mean that we don't desire for things to be different.
It's also not synonymous with agreement.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a better way of saying it. Or yeah, there's lots of different things. You could say validation. Mm-hmm. You could say agreement. You could say apathy. You know, I think there's mm-hmm. there's different things that have from time to time been associated with, well, and you used the language earlier in the conversation, well, I can't accept that.
Right.
I would put it, you know, I would challenge anyone to consider that perhaps you can accept it and you don't have to own it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree with it. You mm-hmm. don't have to take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
You can still desire to pursue change and transformation or evolution or altering your circumstances even while you are in a state of acceptance of whatever it is that is the current state.
Can we define acceptance?
I wanted to ask that earlier. Let's do that.
Yeah. I think acceptance has something to do with acknowledging that this exists and my relationship with the simple truth that this exists is non-oppositional.
That's really good. I think that's really getting to the heart of what acceptance actually is. Acceptance is almost a form of honesty
in a way.
Oh gosh, I'm trying to how do I do this without using the word
define meaning.
I think the word you used was acknowledge, and I think that's correct. It's an acknowledgement of the truth. It's an acknowledgement of the facts of reality as I best can sense them, mm-hmm. as I best can understand them mm-hmm. in this moment. And that secondary piece is super important. I'm not in opposition to knowing that this is true. It's not to say that I wouldn't choose to change the state of affairs,
right,
if I have the power to do so, but I'm not denying that it's real.
That's a key component of it. And it's this, how do I even put this into words? So I want to use like a hyperbolic example to help hone in on this definition. Let's say that you have a neighbor and their neighbor, you hear them yelling at their kids and calling them names and whipping them with sticks and shit. And there's like judgments that come up that that's wrong. How could you? Why are they treating those poor kids? All of these things come up. And to accept that person who is doing that to their kids doesn't mean that I'm like right on the edge of it. It doesn't mean that you condone or agree with their parenting practices.
Yeah. To accept is not necessarily to condone.
For sure. It also doesn't mean that you can't go up to them and knock on their door one day and say, hey, I notice hearing this and I'm just wondering like what's happening for you in your life, and like engaging in a conversation with them with an intention and desire to see change occur.
Yeah.
At some level. Like so those things can both coexist, and there can be a state of acceptance within myself that, okay, at this specific geolocation in the universe, this phenomenon is happening.
Right. Right. Or
yeah,
at some other place and time in my life, this thing did happen.
Yeah.
It did happen.
Right.
And all of the facts of that particular experience, I acknowledge as true. That's really the key. I mean, that's the key that we're really honing in on here, is it's that internal self-acceptance, which we can hold all of the different meanings of that. You know, self-acceptance in that I accept myself, mm-hmm. self-acceptance in that my acceptance occurs here within myself. My acceptance of anything is an aspect of self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to go all the way metaphysical with it, you know, well, we're all God and I'm a fractal piece of the infinite, and so mm-hmm. everything is part of myself. But but then there's also the flip side of the word, where it means something about to receive, like in a transaction. I'm sorry, I don't accept Discover Card, mm-hmm. or I'm not open to accepting your gift. I'm not mm-hmm. I don't accept. So there's an actual physical, tangible sense of the word accept, which is to choose to receive.
Yeah.
And that's tied up in the concept somehow too.
I think so. I think that's actually also a part of the non-oppositional nature of it.
Yes, I receive. I choose to receive this truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's allowing it in with no opposition and no resistance. And so I fully accept you exactly as you are.
Okay. Right. But then there's the phrase like, this is not acceptable. I cannot accept this behavior in our relationship.
Right.
I will not accept disrespect.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of a statement of, when we say that, I think what we're really saying, if we're not actively denying the facts of reality, which would be, I think, counterproductive to one's own
well-being.
Well-being. Thank you.
Yeah.
What we're really saying is, I insist on changing my own experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's, in a sense, what it means to not accept. I'm not willing to accept this now moment. I'm not willing to accept this experience. And so I will do something to change it.
But there's something self-defeating in that. There's something counterproductive in that. Because wouldn't it be more productive to say, I accept what's happening in this moment, and also I am not going to continue to be a part of it? Or
I think that's a quote-unquote superior path than willingly resisting the now moment, which is always exactly what it is, whether or not you resist it or not. So it's just siphoning off a portion of your life force energy into the willful act of resistance of the moment is just less preferable as a strategy than just accepting it, having your full power preserved in that acceptance, and then making a new choice.
Yeah. So in the light of that receiving component about the word acceptance, then kind of the core definition would be to willingly receive reality into your present moment experience.
Yes.
That's acceptance. And,
I think so.
And what creates suffering many times is that active resistance to reality.
Yeah.
In other words, reality's coming in whether you like it or not.
Right.
We could do this the easy way or the hard way.
Yeah. We could do this the way of pressing down the emotion and then wrapping a spell around it and keeping it stuck in the energy body. And that game can be played indefinitely. There is no end to that game. It's by choosing to welcome that energy back into our awareness and say, thank you, I love you, I accept you exactly as you are, that all of that stored up energy just seems to just be freed up, returned to the self.
Yeah. We store and spend a lot of energy in resistance to reality.
Yeah.
Denial of reality in a way.
Yeah.
Like whether that's a past experience that we've got, we've wrapped an emotional charge around, or that got packaged in an emotional charge at some point. That emotional component almost is sort of like it's a strategy for protecting ourselves from the truth of that reality.
In so many cases, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other cases, it's a strategy to have some kind of need met, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the desire framing. Of like, well, I'm holding on to this fear because I want to be loved. I'm holding on to this anger because I don't want to be hurt, which means I want to be safe. And it's I'm holding on. Whereas there's a new way, which is an ancient way, which is not at all a new way.
That's like the way.
Apparently.
It probably has been referred to as the way.
Yeah.
Some philosophy.
In many philosophies.
Yeah.
And I think that the only thing that is new, quote unquote, that I'm at least new in my awareness, is that like up until now, acceptance has been this thing of like, yeah, sure, I accept myself. Yeah, I accept things the way they are. Sure. Great. And it's this very heady intellectual, there's no depth to it. And I think that the new dimension of depth is really bringing the emotional, bringing the experiential charge into the awareness So yeah. If I'm in dispute, if I'm in conflict with someone, and I go home at the end of the day and I see their face and I'm like, fucking, they did me wrong. All of that. So there's the mental image of their being that I'm tying all of this frustration and shit to. And I'm doing that. They're not doing it to me. I'm doing that to myself. And instead of just like, I'll sleep it off or whatever, bringing it through intention, welcoming that charge, that experience, and looking at that person, oh, some part of me doesn't want to accept and forgive. So hold on, let me look at that real quick. I accept and forgive you. I love you. Thank you for your wisdom, etc. Okay, now I come back to you. I accept you and I forgive you exactly as you are. Thank you.
Well, I think that's exactly the kind of intuition or realization that I've been having through this conversation that I was trying to speak to earlier, is that all of these different things that we do are different strategies and tools and techniques and modalities mm-hmm. for helping people and helping ourselves to clear out the layers of denial of reality that are standing between us and just...
Knew that was going to happen at some point.
Oh, that's an alarm.
1224 alarm to remind me that I am creating this moment.
I'm definitely leaving that in. Cool. It's all about getting to acceptance of what is, right? All of the stuff we do, reframing, turnaround, clearing out story, clearing out meaning, all of the different things that we're doing is we're just pulling away the layers until we get to the truth.
Right.
And then accept it, and then just know that that is true. And then poof.
Right.
It's like, okay, it doesn't mean I have to forget about it. It doesn't mean that I'm never going to feel anything in relation to it before, but I have peace with it.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm starting to see that.
And it's really interesting.
It's so funny that I had to go through my own 3+ year journey exploration into all of this before this new awareness, I was like actually willing to let it in and receive it and experience it. And now that I'm in the practice of doing it every day, I'm not really doing belief work for myself anymore. Mm. I'm finding this to be a more valuable pursuit, mm-hmm. which is why I'm like putting all of Sovereign Mind into question. Like, well, what the hell do I do now? Mm-hmm. So it's a fun existential place to be in, and I accept it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, this has been so rich. Well, I got one more little quick thing, which is, mm-hmm. what do you think about in my model, the model that I articulated before about kind of the different kinds of parts mm-hmm. and how our imagery, intuitions, emotions, and felt sensations can be the language, literally, that those parts use to speak to each other, to speak to our meta-ego, if you will. Insofar as when we've got a stored memory that's wrapped in an emotional charge, and then every time that memory gets triggered or the pattern associated with that gets triggered or whatever, that we re-experience that charge.
Yeah.
Okay. An analogy or metaphor for that. The wrapping, that emotional or that intuitional or that sensory, whatever, that wrapping, that packaging of that shadow copy is like a message in a bottle. It's like a letter that was written to you by a part of yourself that had the forefront of your consciousness at the time that was happening.
Right.
Whether it was your limbic system jumped into control. Gosh, it just happened to me right now. Oh my God, that's cool. Amazing.
Just made it happen. Yeah.
Goosebumps all over my body when I said that. Yeah. Your limbic system jumps into control and you go into fight or flight. And it's doing its thing, and it's like, okay, I'm going to write a real quick letter to future you, put it in this envelope called this packaged memory associated with fear and pain and all of these visual images or whatever, mm-hmm. boop, and I'm going to leave that for you to read later, because right now mm-hmm. is not the time, but there's something important information here that we want to not forget, that is going to be important to you later. And then the same thing can happen in a peak experience of joy. The same thing can happen in a peak experience of anger, shame, or anything else, or, you know, things that are non-emotional. But that, like, these are messages that have been left for us, sealed up in a little envelope, wrapped in that specific emotional packaging. Mm-hmm. And the process of acceptance is choosing to, instead of every time you see that envelope and going like, ooh, nope, not today. instead of doing that, you actually choose.
I'll reach for another bottle instead of that one.
Yes. Not today, Satan, as they say. Mm-hmm. Instead of that, you actually choose to go ahead and open that letter and read it fully. And once that process is done, then you can put it in your filing cabinet and it no longer, but discard the envelope. You can discard the envelope and just put the information mm-hmm. of that memory, of that lesson, of that new awareness that you gained, like that, I call that the process of integration. Taking the emotion or taking the informational content, putting it in your filing cabinet.
Yeah.
Is the process of integration. Now you can discard the envelope. What do you think about that?
I like that. And you can discard the bottle. And like the visual metaphor that extends for me is like there's a finite number of bottles clanking around in our system, in our memory bank. Mm-hmm. And they cause a lot of noise, clanking, 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 and continuously sending up little signals that like, hey, why do I subtly hear clinkle clanks every day of my life? What is it? But it's signaling like, hey, there's something unaddressed and unresolved within myself that actually requires my attention for a moment. Mm-hmm. And the more times that we actually just welcome that experience into the forefront of our awareness and read the message that lives within it, we can start decluttering and recycling those bottles. They go off. They serve a benevolent purpose. We retain the information from the experience and we can file it wherever we choose, and then we're not subtly there's no clinking, my mind is quiet now as a result of continuing this practice. I see it as highly beneficial, and the idea of there being multiple brains mapping onto multiple parts, I'd be curious to tease apart that in some other conversation, because there seems to be some people who go through a lot of trauma. They got more than five parts, right?
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure that in some version of this model, multiple virtual machines can live on one host, right?
Yeah.
So that I'm sure extended.
Right. Just to be clear, I completely agree with that. And when I'm talking about the five, I'm talking about the five brains.
Got it.
And there's probably more than five. Those are the, I could see breaking down some of those brains into more brains in the same way that we take the one brain and break it into three. I think it could be more than three. But anyway, those would be, in the computer analogy, those would be the physical hosts, the physical brains.
Yes.
Each brain can represent a part.
Yes.
But then in the virtualization layer created on that cluster, we can have lots, dozens, maybe hundreds.
Yeah, yeah. And they're drawing
virtual parts.
Exactly. They're drawing their compute maybe from the whole cluster.
Right.
But they're their own abstraction in the virtual machine.
Precisely. And we just so happen to have the okay, we're getting real geeky now.
Okay.
The virtual center, virtual machine.
Uh-huh.
On the cluster, the management VM.
Okay, got it.
The management VM thinks that it is the whole person.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, because that's what it would think.
Right.
That's great.
And all it knows is it's just like, wow, I'm getting log messages from here. I'm getting log messages from there. Oh, that's very interesting. But I am, of course, the whole universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's my model. That's the way I think of it.
I love it.
Well, I'm curious if you would, this is kind of make things real, very real for us, and me right now.
Yeah.
Would you like to practice some acceptance and forgiveness?
I would.
In our relationship?
That'd be great. Yeah, I welcome that.
How do we? Yes.
Okay, cool.
How do we do that?
I'll come a little closer.
Okay.
And I'll just like invite a couple of breaths to just kind of like ground and center for myself. Feel free to join me.
I'm with you.
Anyway.
Yeah, and welcoming any felt sense, any emotion, any thought, any image. All experience is perfectly welcome because it's all going to be accepted anyway. So I'll now open my eyes and look at you. And I'll just speak for my true self. Thank you. I love you. I accept you exactly as you are. And I forgive you completely. Glad I witness you. I love you. I fully accept you exactly as you are, for who you are. And I forgive you for anything and everything. Yeah.
I receive that.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
That really works.
Yeah.
It really works.
I feel so curious how that was for you.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Well.
Thanks for this conversation, man.
Thank you.
This was really cool.
What a joy.
Thanks for joining me for this sacred conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And don't forget that the conversation can always continue. We can build on a topic that we've already talked about, and we can also start new topics and see how they all weave together. And that's just the exciting thing about this whole journey of exploration, is we don't know where it's going to go, but I'm really excited to find out with you. Please don't be shy to reach out and schedule your sacred conversation on whatever topic is interesting to you. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking with you soon.